Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Friday, December the 19th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, there are again calls for the boss of South East Water to resign following major supply issues in Tunbridge Wells. One of Kent's MPs wants those behind a major illegal waste dump to be prosecuted, and it's expected to be one of the busiest days for the festive getaway. But first, this is our most read story on the website by far today. Figures have revealed where people moving to Kent from London are choosing to set up home. According to data from the Office for National Statistics, nearly 6 in 10 who've moved to Dartford since 2011 came from the capital, while more than a third of those who've relocated to Folkestone and Hythe in the same time were so-called DFLs. Well, local Democracy reporter Dan Essen has collated the stats and joins me now. Dan, thanks ever so much for being on the podcast. So can you tell me a bit about how these figures are actually worked out?
Yeah, so basically the Office of National Statistics, every year they come in June or so, they compile this data on intra-British migration, people moving from one local authority area to another. And obviously this includes every local authority area in London, all 33 boroughs plus the City of London, which is technically separate, and all of the 13 councils in Kent, Medway plus the 12 district councils. So basically what I did was I had to go through all these spreadsheets, sort them into the London and Kent data, and then do some maths to work out how many people every year are moving from one place to the other and vice versa. And then, compile it into a very, very large spreadsheet and to get the trends out of it.
And can you pick out some of the highlights for us, Dan?
Highlight essentially is that the single district in the past 13 or so years, well, 2011 to 2024, that's had the most people move in full stop was Canterbury, about 195,000 people. Needless to say that all of that is offset by people moving elsewhere, people going to other countries or just staying inside Britain and moving elsewhere. The population of Canterbury has not grown by 200,000 people in 13 years. It's offset by deaths and stuff like that as well. But Canterbury's had the highest amount of inward migration, 195,000 people. Behind that is Medway at about 185,000 people, which is kind of what you'd expect. But when you look at the proportion of those new arrivals who move from London local authorities, the picture is quite different. Dartford, which is obviously the closest part of Kent to London, is right next to Bexley. Perhaps unsurprisingly, that has by far the highest proportion of people from London moving in, at about almost 60%. And people I speak to in Dartford say that doesn't really surprise them because Bexley Heath, Chislehurst or whatever to Dartford doesn't feel like much of a large hop. Behind that in second place is the county town, Maidstone, with 45% of people who've moved in there in the past 13 years being from London. That kind of did surprise me because Maidstone's a lot further away from the capital city, but Maidstone also has pretty much the highest rate of house building in the entire county. So that's probably part of the explanation. And in East Kent, the part of the county which has had the most people move in the east is Folkestone Hythe, which isn't too surprising. It's got a reputation for being especially during the years of the pandemic when people could work from home, it has a reputation for kind of being where you want to go if you want to go to the coast, get away from London, still possible to commute to London, work from home a couple of days a week, that kind of thing. So yeah, Folkestone Hythe is about 37-38% of people who've moved in the past 13 years or so came from the capital city. But it's also quite a low overall number of people moving in, only about 75,000, so less than half of what places like Canterbury or Medway have had.
And why do you think Kent is seen as an attractive alternative to London?
Well, I think the main thing is definitely affordability. The places in Kent which are closest to London, the sort of Medway, Dartford, Gravesend conurbation that gradually bleeds into London, it's still much more expensive than the rest of the county, but it's still cheaper than pretty much anywhere in London. The price for a house from Bexley to Dartford is probably significantly different. But with the coast in particular, especially somewhere like Folkestone, it has, for how far away it is from London, it has really good transport links. The high speed one makes it so that you can get to London in not much more or less than an hour from a lot of the places in furthest East Kent. And also, like I said, Folkestone has something of a reputation. It's got a very burgeoning cultural scene. It's got a lot of people who've perhaps worked in London for a long time, got a bit of money that will get you maybe not much in London, but a very nice house in Folkestone. Got a lot of nice businesses. It's widely regarded as a nice place to live and raise a family. It's won all these awards, like I think it was Sunday Times place to live in the southeast 2024 or something like that. So it's it kind of snowballs. People move there, they like it. It develops a reputation for being nice. More people move there and like it. But then, strange enough, literally 10 miles down the coast, Dover, where I'm from, is the complete opposite. It's had the lowest level of inward migration of anywhere in Kent at 75,000, and by far the lowest amount of people from London at only 16%. And I think that's in part because even though you can get a very, if you're on London wages, you can get a very nice house in Dover for that. But a lot of people, I think, will basically feel, why move there if you could move to Folkestone? It's not got trendy independent cafes and things like that, which is a shame. But a lot of it is reputation and economic geography, pretty much.
Dan, thank you ever so much. And you can see a full breakdown of those stats by heading to the story at Kent Online.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a driver and his passenger who were both drunk when their van struck and killed a pedestrian in Chatham have been jailed for a total of more than 22 years. The cousins were both found to be intoxicated and equally culpable for the crash on Luton Road in 2021. 46-year-old Jason Bales died from his injuries. A man's been sentenced after he was caught with a knife at a Kent nightclub. Adam Reisner found the blade in the toilets of Life on Sittingbourne High Street in June and decided to keep it. The 49-year-old from Hugh Price Close in Merston has been put on a 12-month community order and will have to do 100 hours of unpaid work. A cyclist has been left with multiple injuries after crashing her bike when a car sped past her in Tunbridge Wells. Alexia Hall says she was forced towards the curb and suffered broken ribs, dislocated jaw and cuts that needed stitches. She's hoping to speak to anyone who saw it happen on Monday morning, as the driver didn't stop at the scene. A Kent teacher has told us government plans to tackle misogyny and toxic behaviour in schools should focus on positive masculinity. Teachers are going to be given specialist training and a helpline will also be set up for pupils. It's all part of a government strategy to reduce violence against women and girls. John Still teaches at a school in Medway. He says it's not about stopping boys being boys.
I think we've got to the point where it is necessary. We've got to have a response, haven't we, to things that are online currently that anyone can access. And I think we've got a responsibility to prepare our youngsters for society and for life, you know, whether that's employment, relationships with one another. So I think there is a need for a response.
Now, you're a secondary teacher yourself. You're around young boys and things like that. The sorts of reports that we've had about, you know, misogynistic views, particularly around Andrew Tate and things like that being popular with young boys, is this something that you've seen reflected in the classroom?
What this isn't about, it's not about getting boys to feel ashamed in any way of being male or being masculine. You know, let's get talking about positive masculinity, all the things about being a male, being a boy, being masculine, all those great qualities that males, you know, bring to the table. And let's be proud of that, you know, which include being fathers, role models, being the caring people in society. So let's focus on that. It certainly isn't about stopping young boys being male. What it is about is getting them to understand how they can take their place in society and make a difference and look after everyone around them, whether that's other males, the females in their lives. It's about building relationships. See, and I think that we're going against the tide here on online, where there is that kind of backlash and there is that thought that, are we stopping boys from being males? No, we're not. We're celebrating it. We're celebrating positive masculinity. And I think if we can get that message across and we can empower teachers and other influences in young people's lives to help facilitate that message, then we're going to do our bit for society.
Kent Online reports.
A man in his 80s is confirmed to have died after a tractor was found submerged in water near Ashford. Police, paramedics and firefighters were called to a rural area not far from Woodchurch on November the 28th. We're told a body was recovered from the water, the deaths not being treated as suspicious. The family of a missing man who was found dead near a church in Margate say police should have done more to locate him. Vladimir Kolar was discovered in a tent outside St John the Baptist Church and Community Centre in Victoria Road last Friday. The 42-year-old's family have questioned why an appeal wasn't issued after they filed a missing person report 3 weeks earlier. Well, Kent Police insist officers did carry out inquiries, including reviewing CCTV. They also say they made multiple efforts to contact his loved ones. Two men from Orpington who carried out violent car robberies in Dartford have been jailed for a total of more than 13 years. The pair targeted drivers who were parked up in the town in September last year. In one case, they smashed a vehicle's window and punched the driver in the face before stealing the car to sell it on. Now, the Tunbridge Wells MP has again called for the boss of South East Water to resign following major supply issues in the town at the start of the month. It's after David Hinton said in an interview that he wants to remain in his job and absolutely empathises with customers. Mike Martin isn't impressed.
I think that that interview was entirely unconvincing and really just kind of underlines a lot of the things that I've been saying, that he's not really fit to lead a major public utility. So yeah, he still needs to resign. And the next date for your diaries is the 6th of January when he goes up in front of the EFRA Select Committee in Parliament.
Yeah, he says he's the right man to lead because he appreciates what customers have gone through and he knows how to fix things. But obviously they went through this 3 years ago as well. And you've previously said nothing seems to have changed. Is that still your opinion?
That's exactly right. I mean, he says he's empathetic to customers' pain. But if that were really true, he would have looked very hard at what happened 3 years ago in 2022 when we had a week-long outage in Tunbridge Wells. And he would have fixed the resilience and the crisis communications and the crisis management. And he didn't fix any of those things. So I think that shows to us just how empathetic he really is. I'm afraid he's not fit to lead. He has to go.
24,000 properties were affected by a problem at the Pembrey treatment plant. And when supplies were restored, water had to be boiled before being consumed for 10 days. Well, we've made numerous attempts to speak to David Hinton ourselves. Every time we've been told he doesn't have availability.
Kent Online reports.
A specialist school for vulnerable pupils in Whitstable is facing an uncertain future because of an ongoing funding row with Kent County Council. FAR Academy supports young people with mental and physical health needs who've struggled in mainstream classrooms. The head teacher says he's taken out personal loans to try and keep the site running. Bosses at KCC have raised concerns about an increase in costs they're being asked to pay. Now, a leaked PowerPoint shows that Kent County Council is facing a £60 million budget gap next year, even if it raises council tax by the maximum amount. Reform UK promised to cut spending and keep taxes low when they were elected to run the local authority in May. Under the plans for next year set out by the previous Tory administration, the budget gap was around £20 million. A Medway MP is calling for those responsible for creating an illegal waste dump in her constituency to be prosecuted. Up to 40 lorries a day used to be taking rubbish to Brambletree Wharf in Borstal near Rochester. Well, Lauren Edwards has requested an urgent meeting with authorities after enforcement notices issued by the local council were allegedly ignored.
I've put a lot of pressure on ministers here in Westminster to try and address this issue locally. I have Brambletree Wharf, an illegal waste site in my constituency that I inherited and has been there since about 2018, I think. It is a complete blight on the countryside, and one of my priorities this year has been bringing together the police, the council and the Environment Agency to really work together in a coordinated way. One of the things that I have struggled with is probably the robustness of the Environment Agency response. I've been a little bit critical about their unwillingness to prosecute to date. I hope that that will change. I think it's really important that they are the lead agency that is driving this forward, helping us to hold those responsible for this illegal activity and ultimately leading the cleanup as well. So I think they have a lot of powers at their disposal. I have sort of been questioning whether they're using them all appropriately. I've got a meeting with the Environment Agency in the new year where I'll be raising this. And I've also written to ministers requesting a meeting. We really need a solution to get these sites cleared and to make sure that we're holding those people responsible. And if the Environment Agency needs new powers, I'm very happy to advocate for that. But I think we also need to make make sure that they're using the existing powers that they have properly. And so I'm certainly making the case for them to be much more robust in helping me and the police and the council to clean up that site at Brambletree Wharf.
I mean, it's almost a crime being committed in broad daylight, isn't it? Because you see, I know exactly where that is. You see lorry loads of waste going through Borstal village and being dumped. I guess people living nearby must feel pretty powerless, really, about what they can do about it.
Yeah, they're frustrated by it, and I share their frustration. I mean, and what I would say about that particular site is there's not evidence at the moment that any further waste is being deposited there. It is about how you prosecute those who are responsible, so they feel the full force of the law, and we deter other people and other you know, there's the potential that organised crime is involved in this. We've had a lot of debates in Parliament about it. We need a really, really robust response. My focus really at the moment is on obviously making sure that there is no more waste dumped there, and I'm very pleased that there isn't any more being dumped there at the moment, but we need to focus on clearing it up. It's going to cost a lot of money, and obviously I'll be having a lot of conversations about, you know, how we can approach that and how we can all work together to get that site restored, because it's an absolute blight on the landscape and it's not what we want to see in our countryside. And unfortunately it is not an isolated problem. It is across Kent, like you say. It is also across the southeast and other parts of the country as well. So we really do need a coordinated response, and I'll certainly be using my voice in Westminster to try and push the government as much as we can.
The Environment Agency have told us they're working with Medway Council, and the priority is to work with the new landowner on clearing the site.
Kent Online News.
A former army barracks in Folkestone that's been housing asylum seekers for more than 5 years is due to close today. At its peak, around 350 people were being housed at Napier Barracks after arriving in the UK via small boats. The Home Office is planning to hand the site back to the Ministry of Defence. It'll then be passed to developers for housing. Staying with housing, and plans for 800 new homes in Medway have been officially refused but could still go ahead. Council bosses rejected the scheme in Wainscott, covering 50 hectares off Lower Rochester Road, saying it was unsustainable. The developers submitted an appeal to the Planning Inspectorate, who will have the final say. Now, it's expected to be one of the busiest days on Kent's roads for the Christmas getaway. The RAC reckons 3.6 million journeys will be made today ahead of what's being dubbed Snarl Up Saturday tomorrow. Operation Brock remains in place on the M20, and lorries will be queued between Maidstone and Ashford if there are any delays at the Port of Dover. But Faversham and Mid-Kent MP Helen Whateley has told me that an alternative is desperately needed.
It was meant to be something which was just for emergencies and an improvement on Operation Stack, which used to completely close the motorway, keep the motorway flowing, but only for emergencies. But actually what we're seeing is it being put on literally every single half term and holiday, apart from the one autumn one, but on again and again, and for many weeks through the summer. And although I feel like, well, they tell me, you know, Kent Resilience Forum, National Highways, they say, oh, Operation Brock's on, everything's fine. But for my constituents in Kent and the businesses in the area, it really affects them. It causes lots of trouble, lots of delays, lots of disruption, lots of lorries going down lanes that they shouldn't be going on, and reduces the resilience of the motorway network if something goes wrong, as we saw yesterday with huge queues on the and delays around the M20. So to me, Operation Brock shouldn't be the long-term solution to having a way of queuing lorries if there are delays or risk of delays at the port. We need something different. And there's a couple of things that I'm campaigning on. One is a relatively short-term improvement on it, which is being called Mini Brock, which National Highways has looked at, and that's about starting the Operation Brock traffic management system just beyond Junction 8. At the moment, when it comes on at Junction 8 and you can't get onto the motorway on the coastbound direction at Junction 8, if you can keep Junction 8 working as normal and start it a little bit further along on the motorway, you don't lose much in the way of the queuing space, parking space for the lorries, but you gain a lot more of the normal like functionality of the road network, and it would cause less disruption. So that's one of the things I'm really pushing the government and Department for Transport to fund that improvement. And then in the longer term beyond that, working with Dover Ports, on a whole alternative so that we wouldn't necessarily even have to have Operation Brock at all, or very, very rarely. And that's to get funding for reconfiguration of some of the space at Dover so that you can have actually more lorry parking like within the port. And there is an opportunity to do that. So that would be a bit longer term, but that's another thing I'm really working on for Operation Brock.
More roads news, and a 20 mile per hour speed limit is going to be introduced on the Kent High Street after more than a decade of campaigning. Several other roads in the centre of Sandgate will also be covered by new restrictions aiming to improve safety. Council bosses say the current 30 mile per hour signs will be replaced in January. A shop in Sheerness that showcases the work of more than 30 small traders has announced it's closing down. Spoilt for Choice opened on the High Street in March last year. Owners say the rent is going up again and they've had to make the difficult decision to shut, but they are looking for a new venue. Meantime, a 20-year-old woman from Northfleet who started baking during lockdown has just opened her own business. Billy Outram Horlock took up baking as a hobby when she was stuck at home and couldn't go to school. She's now selling her creations at Billy's Bakes at The Hill in London Road with the help of her mum. And a new festive documentary has been made about Leeds Castle near Maidstone. The Channel 5 show features behind-the-scenes footage of staff getting ready for Christmas. Their event this year is themed around Peter Pan. You'll be able to see it on TV at 8 o'clock tonight.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and it's a trip to Fleetwood Town for Gillingham in League Two this weekend. The Gills are on a run of six games unbeaten, but five of those have ended in a draw. Manager Gareth Ainsworth has been speaking to the club's media team.
We are hard to beat. Yeah, we definitely are. We're organised, we defend well, and the boys never say die. You know, we've had a couple where we've scored last-minute equalisers and last-minute winners, but second half, you know, we let ourselves down a little bit, and I you know, I was toying with myself about formations and substitutions and things like that after the game, as you always do. And yeah, I'll take as much blame as the players, but we'll do it collectively, and we'll go again on Saturday. You know, it's going to be a tough game. This league this year is as close as I've seen it for a long, long time. It really is, you know, and we're in amongst it, you know, with Fleetwood and Cambridge and Chesterfield and all that. This team, mash up teams in the middle here, you know, which is going to change after Christmas, definitely. You know, the four games, and then you come out into January. And I was speaking to Andy Hessenthaler the other day, and we both say at the end of January you sort of know where you're going to be, what you're fighting for, and we want to be amongst it. And you know, we've got to pick up points on the road. Form's been okay. We're not getting beat. Just got to start winning games, you know, because 1 point's obviously, you know, a win and a loss is better than two draws, you know. But the mental side, as I said, it's brilliant that we're hard to beat, but I want to go and win some games.
It's good news as such, just being in here. You've got Andy Smith back. One player maybe you won't have is Nelson. Is it shoulder for Nelson?
Yeah, shoulder popped out on a challenge towards the end of the Barrow game, you know, and I felt for him because he came on, he tried to impact, he's tearing around everywhere and end up, you know, jumping into one of the players and going over. You see it often where somebody sort of levers you and he went over on his shoulder and as he's tried to stop himself falling, he's popped his shoulder out. So Nelson's going to be out for a bit. But Connor, Volksy, Josh Andrews, Marcus Wiley, Ewan Williams, all trained today. So that's really good. And like I say, so I've got some options now coming back, which is brilliant. Not just for Saturday, but for this four-game run that I suppose every manager's having a look at going, wow, this is going to stretch us to the limit. So brilliant to have all those back. And you know, someone like Connor as well, you know, what a character for the squad. To have him back is big, but the two big men as well, it's a treat to see them training.
So some paracetamol needed for your headache selections coming up?
I hope so, I really do. It's been a little bit too easy just to pick the squad and the subs because that's all I've got. Now we're starting to add some more, and I want to be leaving some out of the squad, not in that way, in a good way, that we've got too many good players, and at the moment that really hasn't happened in my tenure here yet.
Gillingham are currently 10th in the table with tomorrow's opposition level on points but one place below them. And in cricket, England are facing another big defeat in the third Ashes test. Kent Sackcrawley is part of the team that started fielding overnight. Australia reached the close of play on day three on 271 for four in their second innings. That's a big lead of 356 runs. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. Whilst you're on the site today, don't forget to check out the latest review from our secret drinker and head to the What's On pages for everything festive going on in the county. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Monday.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.